As they wandered further up the mountain, Savitri became more and more anxious, but the monk Ramana paid no attention to her. He left the deer path, following a cut among huge boulders, and was lost from sight. Scrambling after him, Savitri spied a stream, and beside it sat Ramana. He pulled out his reed flute, which was tucked into his saffron robe, and began to play. "My music doesn't make you smile?" he asked, noticing the anxious look in Savitri's eyes. All she could think about was the Lord of Death, awaiting her at home. "We have so little time," she implored. "Teach me what you would teach." "What if I could teach you the cure for dying?" asked Ramana. Savitri was startled. "I'm sure everyone dies." "Then you believe in rumors. What if I told you that you've never been happy? Would you believe me?" "Of course not. I was happy this morning, before all this trouble began," said Savitri. Ramana nodded. "We all remember being happy, and no one can talk us out of that knowledge. So let me ask you another question. Can you remember not being alive?" "No," Savitri said hesitantly. "Perhaps you can't remember not being alive because you have always been," said Ramana. He pointed to a locust clutching to a twig over her head. "If you see a locust emerging from the ground after 7 years' sleep, does that mean it was dead before that?" Savitri shook her head. "Yet the only reason you believe that you were born is that your parents saw you emerge from the womb. They thought they witnessed the moment when you began to exist, so they spread the rumor that you had been born." Savitri was astonished at this line of reasoning. Ramana became insistent. "Look at this stream. All you see is a short stretch of it. Yet, would you say you know where the stream begins or where it ends?" "Heed me, Savitri. You accept death because you accept birth. The two must go together. Forget these rumors that you were ever born. That is the only cure for dying." Ramana stood up, tucked his flute back in his robe, and began to walk away, and Savitri followed, pondering what he had said. Vedanta's assertion that the soul is always near brings us face to face with the fascinating phenomenon of near-death experiences, which have become a fixed part of popular belief. In a 1991 Gallup poll, 13 million Americans, roughly 5% of the population, reported that they had had such an experience. Near-death is a momentary brush with another reality, or so it seems to those who report the experience. A person is lying in the emergency room or intensive care unit, his heart stops, and for all intents and purposes, death ensues. Yet some of these patients can be resuscitated. When they are, nearly 20% report at least one of the familiar symptoms of NDE, as near-death experience is abbreviated in the medical literature, leaving their bodies, looking down and seeing themselves on the operating table, watching medical procedures being performed, finding themselves in a tunnel, going toward a bright light, feeling the presence of a higher power, hearing or seeing loved ones beckoning to them. Dr. Pin van Lommel, the cardiologist who conducted a major Dutch study on the subject, was astonished by the finding that patients were having a full-blown NDE after their brains had ceased any activity. They were flatline until revived. Suddenly, death becomes robed in some of the trappings of a miracle. How can a person experience any event after the brain's clock has stopped? Other cultures, however, have ventured even further into the timeless, and they assure us that time may end, but consciousness continues. In Tibet, people who come back to life are called D-logs, and one, the famed Lingza Chokyi, left a vivid account in the 16th century. "I was still in the room, but instead of being sick in bed, I left my body and floated up to the ceiling. I saw my body like a dead pig dressed in my clothes. My children wept over me, and this caused me such intense pain. When they said prayers over me, I suddenly felt much better.